In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xenial. But what is a Xenial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xenial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
Okay, we're going to have a little vignette on live action Batmans right now.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, we're going to start with, we won't start with the old black and white films, because frankly, neither you or I have seen enough of them to really make too much comment on them.
I saw the old serials, actually. I've seen a few of them. They're freaking horrendous.
Yeah. So we'll start with, we'll just touch on the original series, the 1970s.
Okay.
60s. 1960s series. Okay. We'll just touch on that a little bit. For the time, I guess Adam West was about the best. I mean, I know you have some personal affection to Adam West since you have a dog with that name.
Yes.
But Adam West was about the best you were going to get for that time frame. You weren't going to get somebody that was a bodybuilder or had a great physique that you were going to be able to also have as an actor.
No, not necessarily. But they also broke way from the comic book continuity.
Yeah, it was nothing like the continuity. I mean, you have Cesar Romero with a freaking mustache under his white grease paint makeup.
That he refused to shave.
Yes. So, and admittedly, you got an award-winning villain, the guy who played the Riddler.
Yes.
He won awards for that role. And I kind of like Burgess Meredith as the Penguin.
He was personally a great Penguin.
He's hilarious. But as far as anything else goes, it was just a campy, fun show. It really wasn't, you know, a real depiction of the Caped Crusader, the Dark Knight.
Yeah, that was kind of the point, I guess, of that series. So, it was turning a dark hero into a kid's superhero.
Basically, yes.
It was a kid's show.
So, we get into the Batman that I'm sure affected both you and I that came out in the 80s.
Yes.
The first Tim Burton Batman.
1989.
First problem, obviously, is that Tim Burton really is not the best choice of person to do a comic book movie to begin with. While he has a great visual style and aesthetic, the dude is not a comic book guy.
No.
So he casts Michael Keaton, a comedic actor,
right,
as Batman, a dad bod comedic actor. Before dad bod was even a thing, this is a dad bod comedic actor.
Okay.
Now, I want to say to you, as Bruce Wayne, decent Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
I would say one of the better Bruce Waynes, because this is the role of Batman is important in that you have two very distinct roles.
Yeah.
You have Batman and then you have Bruce Wayne, and Bruce Wayne is really the costume that Batman wears.
Right.
Because Batman is who he really is.
Right.
So Keaton had kind of a little bit of that absent-minded, weird, kind of funny guy. A little bit of the Playboy thing going on.
Right.
And not the magazine, but like the guy that's rich that spends money and sleeps with a bunch of women, or at least appears to sleep with a bunch of women, that type of Playboy.
Right.
But as Batman, this is not an intimidating dude. Now, they put him in a suit that was pretty badass for the time.
Totally.
The black leather suit that he's in, or rubber suit that he's in,
yeah,
is pretty badass.
Right.
And for those of us that first encountered it, his car was awesome. But really, Keaton behind the cowl, just not enough. Not enough to make me fear. Not enough to inspire fear in the criminals. The whole point of him dressing as a bat in the comics is, I fear this. Let me use my fear to inspire fear in the criminals.
I've got a question for you.
Yes.
Do you think that there would have been a better casting choice at the time period? Like, who would you consider that was an 80s movie star that could pull off both Bruce Wayne and Batman? Because Clint Eastwood could have pulled off Batman like a son of a gun.
Clint could have pulled off Batman.
But he couldn't have been Bruce Wayne.
No,
he wasn't. He wouldn't be a good Bruce Wayne. It wouldn't have worked.
That is something that I would have to think about. It would have been a difficult thing at the time.
Yeah.
Because anybody that would have been of the appropriate physique to play the part,
mm-hmm,
wouldn't have had the acting chops at the time to play the
right
part. This is before actors would literally transform their bodies to get into various roles.
Right.
So there's that involved.
That was kind of Tim Burton's solution. Oh, well, he's not a really muscular guy, so let's just go ahead and carve a bunch of muscles into the suit.
Yeah, to an extent, that worked.
Yeah.
through the first movie, through the second movie. Second movie's hampered by, as much as I love Danny DeVito, and I do, being a short, fat guy myself,
yeah.
I have a lot of love for Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
Amazing actor that has been able to do a whole bunch of great things. I wouldn't say it's his fault. I would say it's the interpretation of the Penguin.
Yeah.
I do like the fact that Pee-wee Herman was his dad. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But the Tim Burton interpretation of the Penguin was just a little too dark and disgusting, I feel.
It's weird. I considered it to be relatively believable, but he gave him this. Like, the Penguin didn't have a tie-in to actual birds. That wasn't his thing.
Yeah, no, it was
not
just,
originally. He just looked like a penguin, so that's why they called him.
It was
the penguin.
It was the wearing of the suit.
Yeah,
and the suit, the top hat, the umbrella. That was kind of he was dressed in a penguin suit.
Yeah, and they turned around and they made him some, you know,
freak,
strange, yeah, freakish, mutated.
Yeah, and
thing.
I think, and again, that's kind of Tim Burton's thing.
Yeah,
I mean, you watch. And I think Tim Burton most recently made it up to Danny DeVito with the role he had in the movie Big Fish and then currently in Dumbo.
DeVito's in Dumbo, huh?
In both movies, he plays basically a circus kind of ringmaster.
Cool.
Which is, in a sense, almost what the the Penguin was basically a circus freak.
Yeah.
So you're getting at least some typecasting there, I guess.
Yeah.
But some better roles for DeVito as a result. But still, Keaton... Even in the second one, you get the Bruce Wayne stuff, especially his interactions with like Selena Kyle in that.
Yeah.
Great stuff. And Michelle Pfeiffer, actually a really decent choice for Selena Kyle.
She was probably the best choice out of all of the casting.
Well,
there's
one other good piece of casting in that film.
In Batman Returns?
Yes, Max Schreck.
Was Max Schreck a comic character? Was he invented for the films?
I don't remember. I would have to look for sure, but it doesn't matter because the casting was amazing.
Of course it was.
Yeah, got anytime
you put Christopher Walken in practically anything, and he's awesome.
Just about, yeah, just yeah. about. So that's, and that, you know, that part of it was fun, having Walken in there. But, yeah, as far as the Batman, which is what we're really focusing on here.
Yeah.
Keaton's just, he pulled off Bruce Wayne, and I would say that he is probably the best of the Bruce Waynes.
Okay.
Of the cinematic Batmans. I would say he's the best of the Bruce Waynes.
Okay.
But as far as Batmans go, no. He's just not intimidating enough, not scary enough. Now.
Yeah, I can understand that.
And not serious enough. There was just something lacking. Now we go on to Batman Forever.
Kilmer.
Caveat here. When Batman Forever came out, I was totally obsessed with that movie. Like, completely obsessed with that movie. I was a little mad that that Lando didn't get his chance to be Two-Face. That hurt a little bit.
Yeah,
Till the Lego movie, fine. But still,
but he would have been a fantastic Two-Face.
It would have been a hell of a thing for him to be Two-Face.
Probably would have gotten along with Jim Carrey too.
Probably wouldn't have hated Jim Carrey as much as Tommy Lee Jones reportedly did during the production of that.
He
couldn't stand him. Jim Carrey, I think, weakest point in the movie. Personally, but not one of my favorite Jim Carrey roles. I think it was just way too overdone, which
I liked his Riddler because it was outlandish.
I liked his Edward Nygma. I didn't like his Riddler.
His Nygma is really good.
And that's almost the same thing as we're talking about with the Batman situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I can understand
now,
that.
Take into account that Batman Forever is a Joel Schumacher directed film.
Okay.
And Joel Schumacher up to that point was only known for having directed, a couple of John Grisham novels into movies, The Lost Boys, and a bunch of music videos for NXS.
I did not know that.
What?
All of the things that you just said.
Yeah, that's what Schumacher had done before that. After that, he did Batman and Robin, and interestingly enough, the live-action Phantom of the Opera. You've seen that, right?
No.
Are you aware of the live-action Phantom of the Opera?
No.
Okay, so you've seen... what is the... The Watchmen. You've seen The Watchmen, right?
Yes.
Okay. Night Owl in The Watchmen.
Yes.
Yeah. So he's in Phantom of the Opera.
Cool.
Do you know who Emmy Rossum is? The actress, Emmy Rossum?
Heard the name.
Okay. She's in Phantom of the Opera.
Okay.
And the Phantom is actually played by Gerard Butler.
Wow.
Gerard Butler can sing, sir.
Gerard Butler. That's...
Leonidas.
Yeah. 300. Leonidas from... Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. From 300.
This is my opera. Seriously though.
Wow.
Watch it. It's he's actually a really, really good singer.
I can see that.
Much better than you would expect him to be. He's got some, the Phantom part in that has some pretty, I mean, the real difficult role is Christine Daae, the part Emmy Rossum plays. You really need to be a trained singer to do it. Interestingly, it was when that movie was made, it was between Emmy Rossum and Anne Hathaway.
Oh.
Because both of them are very well-trained singers.
Yeah.
Lots of schooling. But, yeah, Jared Butler, he can sing.
Cool, man.
But anyway, back to Batman Forever. See, again, I was very much obsessed with this. I liked Kilmer's Batman. I did not like his Bruce Wayne. His Bruce Wayne was too serious, too cerebral. Bruce Wayne's has not ever, at any point in the comics, been serious and cerebral. At least not to the outside world. He'll be that way to Alfred. He'll be that way to whatever Robin he's dealing with at the time.
There wasn't really a lot of interaction when it came down to Bruce in any of those films up to that point. There wasn't. There was. Lucius Fox wasn't in any of the films at that point.
No.
Alfred was just like
an old dude.
Yeah,
and still was in Batman Forever. It was still Michael Gow.
It was still Michael Gow, and yep. Like I think through Batman and Robin too, wasn't he?
Yes,
he was the same role all the way through. Mm-hmm. But every time you saw Alfred, there was no character to Alfred. It was just.
Alfred the butler.
Yeah, Alfred the butler. He's the butler that helps Batman.
Well, of course, there's him in Batman and Robin using a CD player and moving the CD back and forth on the CD player like you would a record to get it to scratch and replay itself. It's. CDs don't work that way. But anyway, he was lovable,
but there was not enough snark to his character.
There wasn't much there.
You didn't have that. And they didn't write in Alfred as, you know, as the military-trained guardian of Bruce until the 90s, I think, right?
Well, no. Batman Forever's are you talking about in the comic books?
Yeah, I'm talking about the comic books. So that part of the character wasn't developed yet.
That would have been after the Nightfall series.
Okay. Nightfall. Okay, so we're talking,
Even in Nightfall, Alfred's just still the older butler.
Gotcha. Okay, so basically, this what we're talking about. There wasn't enough character development for him, so there was nothing for the reason why I'm saying is because there's nothing for Bruce to play off.
Well, Bruce is playing in Batman Forever. He's playing off of Nicole Kidman's Chase Meridian, terrible name, and at one point or other, he's at Wayne Enterprises.
Yeah.
Doing the investigation into the death of I forget the guy's name that Edward Nygma kills.
Yeah, his boss.
Yeah. And again, you're getting a very serious Bruce Wayne, very serious, very studious, very intellectual. With Chase Meridian, he's that way. Even when he shows up at the circus and the whole circus thing goes down with Robin's parents and whatnot, he's very serious, very
extremely
studious.
Stoic.
Yes.
And I think that's just the way his character was written. We both know that Kilmer is more than capable of playing somebody of that caliber. It's just he didn't get that in the script.
And when he's as Batman, he's serious. There's seriousness behind him. There's a little bit of danger behind him.
He's good. He's also caring at the same point, too. Like, that was one of the things. Like, he was able to portray his regret and his care for Harvey. During the entire film, even dealing with
still being Batman and being at least enough fearful that people would be afraid of him.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's a lot to that.
Then we have the Abomination movie.
Bat nipples. Did Bat nipples happen in the previous one?
There was nips in Forever. There was Damn nips it, in Forever.
Bat nipples.
Now Schumacher had to have nips on it, no matter what.
No, it was the worst chin on Batman ever. Right? Is that what it is?
What?
He had a horrendous chin.
Who?
Clooney.
Well, there was the chin, but there was also the gratuitous butt shots in that movie.
There were butt shots in Batman Forever, too, weren't there?
A very small one. They were all over the place.
There was like, he played, Schumacher parodied everything he did in the previous movie.
In a sense, yes. It was more of a parody than anything else. And Clooney failed as both Bruce Wayne and as Batman. The point is that we then can get into the more modern Batman films. Now, I really do believe Christian Bale hit the nail on the head when it came to Batman, especially young Batman. In the third one where he's playing a little bit older Batman, I think there's a problem not from Bale's performance, but from the fact that they cut off Batman when they did at the end of the second one, and they didn't have enough growth, I think, between the second and third one with things.
I have a problem with Christian Bale's Batman.
Okay, what's your problem with his Batman? Go on.
That voice is horrible. I understand wanting to do a secondary voice for that.
Yeah.
I think they solved it afterwards with Affleck. I think that was a really good call. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay.
But Christian Bale's monster voice with a lisp.
Swear to me.
No, there's a lisp on top of it, too.
Yeah.
That's what I can't stand.
Well, first of all, he is Welsh. You know that.
Okay.
So him doing an American accent anyway, he already has a lisp from his Welsh accent.
That's fine. But in order to do this, they could have gone other routes rather than him doing
that voice,
monster voice.
I get that.
The idea behind it is cool. I can still look past it and watch the films and enjoy them.
Beyond the voice, I would say he nailed Batman.
Everything else about Batman was awesome. The dialogue, the attitude, the intimidation.
One of my favorite points is the first fight when he's down at the docks, checking out the teddy bear thing.
Yeah.
And in the first fight sequence, there's all these guys running around all the cargo containers in the docks, and for the first 5 minutes of the fight sequence, you don't even see Batman. You just see people disappearing and being pulled off this direction, or you see a quick glimpse, and then when the fight happens, he drops down in the middle of them, and you barely see Batman. You just see the outside of it, and people are getting beat up. And contrary to what happened in all the previous Batmans, where you'd see him do all these fancy kicks and martial arts moves and all these different things.
No, that's not what it was about. He hid.
It was about how Batman really, the idea of what he did in the comics was use location to his advantage.
Yep.
He would engage only as he had to with his advantage.
Yes.
Everything was about getting the advantage over whoever he was fighting. It wasn't about just dropping in the middle of the room and spin kicking all these bad guys dressed in bright colored clothing.
Yes.
It was literally about him inspiring fear. And the people in that scene are terrified of him.
Yes.
Because they don't know where he's coming from. They don't know what he's going to do.
Yes.
And he's just popping out of places and doing stuff. It's an amazing usage of the scene to understand the character even better.
Yes. I think that was fantastic. One of the things that I also, and I blame the directors and the screenwriters for this.
Okay.
That's very overlooked is I don't remember seeing any particular type of detective work that was done since the first Keaton film. There were no other, I mean, I think a little bit of it was done in Returns, but at least in the first Keaton, they at least had the detective work in that first film. There was no detective work throughout pretty much any of the Dark Knight series. He was just developing weapons, and he happened to know when things were happening, but there was no mystery to anything. And that's one of the major things about Batman is that he is a detective. Now, they did do the detective work in the Justice League films afterwards.
We'll get to those in a minute.
Batman versus Superman at least had that.
We'll get to those in a minute. I'm trying to think of there's maybe a little tiny bit of the detective work in the first one in Batman Begins. Maybe a tiny bit of it where he goes to the police station before he has the full uniform.
Yes.
Pretends to hold up Gordon with a stapler.
Yes.
Gets some information out of Gordon. He goes to the place in the Narrows where he sees little baby Joffrey. Or little young Joffrey.
It is little Joffrey.
Gives little Joffrey his bat scope thing and is investigating that place before he gets set on fire and burned. So there is a little bit of detective work in that.
Okay.
Little bit. But okay. I understand your issue with that because it's more about the action and the stuff going on. And of course, the place in the Narrows is what leads him to the docks to have that. So there is a little bit of detective work. Oh, the scene where he snags and is interrogating the one fat police officer, the corrupt fat police officer.
You're correct.
The swear to me scene.
I love that.
So
this falls isn't going to kill me. No, just break your legs.
Good. No, that's a different. That's in two. That's not in one.
Oh,
that's in two. And that's
no. You're right. You're right. That's the one where he drops him and then sets him down and upside down. That's right.
No,
I look like a cop?
In
that was a good section
actually,
of using that voice though.
Do I look like a cop part?
Yeah.
Is in the second one. Because the first one is
why am I messing these up?
I don't know, but the first one is you got the fat
cop. It's been so long since I've seen him.
The fat cop has just basically taken food from a food truck. Like a gyro or something from a food truck or a food cart, and he's walking, he gets caught, his foot gets caught in a snare from Batman. Batman reels him up, holding him upside down, yelling at him. He's like, I swear to God, swear to me.
Yes, and
then
that's what it
and
is.
And then he's dropping him, bringing him up, and then drops him almost to the ground and then releases
and then,
him.
Yep,
so he's got the fall. The second one, he's trying to get information about who tried to shoot the mayor and ended up shooting and supposedly killing Commissioner Gordon.
Right.
And he gets the crime boss, who's played by Eric Roberts, who always plays evil people, and takes him up a couple of stories and drops him and breaks his legs. That's where he talks about not being a cop.
But yes. he tries to get to him in the restaurant with the handgun in the first film. Right?
No, in the second film, he goes to see him in a bar.
I thought he was in a restaurant.
The crime boss in the first film that he tries to shoot in the restaurant when he's still Bruce Wayne, he has not become Batman yet.
Uh-huh. I thought that was Roberts.
No, that's, I can't remember the actor's name. He's a British actor. Before that, he was most famous for being in the movie The Full Monty. Oh. I can't think of his name, though. Great British actor, though.
Okay.
And he's Falcone. He goes nuts at the end of the first movie from he ends up double-crossing Scarecrow, and Scarecrow gives him his toxin.
Oh, God, I got to go back through and
Roberts is a whole different crime boss, whole different one.
Yeah, he's Maroni.
Is he Maroni?
I think
he is Maroni.
He's Maroni. But, he's Falcone's rival. He's Maroni.
But, he's the one that gets dropped and gets his legs broken.
Okay.
And this is after, I believe, it's after the Joker has killed people and all part of that. And that's what helps send Harvey over the edge.
I am completely screwing up my timeline on those films. It's been such a long time.
But again, other than the voice, Christian Bale, especially with the musculature and the build that he got, Christian Bale did embody what we kind of see as the Batman. Also had, up to that point, the best Batman suit. His suit was awesome because his suit was realistic. Yeah. His suit was so much more realistic than the rubber suits that were worn before.
Like, he actually gained weight for the role, and he legitimately, like...
Well, and the first what was nice about it is they got to do an evolution of the suit that made sense with the evolution of the story. In the first movie, he had the standard cowl where he couldn't turn his neck, and he complained about it. In the second movie, they purposely made the pieces so that they were... various pieces put together that he had more body movement and specifically the ability to move his neck more.
They did also. One of the things that I did like about that was they write into the script, because you can turn your head. Now, those are weak points, right? Like, they specifically talk about how it is both a tactical advantage and disadvantage.
Yeah.
I liked that, too. That was very smart.
They made the suit a part of the story. In fact, they made all of the gadgets a part of the story as to why he had them.
Yes.
As opposed to it just being something that he just had for the hell of it.
Yeah.
There was reasons for almost everything, which helped to root it in some reality, which for that iteration of Batman worked. A Batman that existed in a world without any other superheroes.
Yeah.
That worked.
Yeah. I like that. That was very, very well done.
And we're going to take a break now. I'm sure that y'all need one. We will be back in just a minute.
Hey friends, this is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thezennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now, back to the show.
And we are back.
Yes, yes.
So now we get to the controversial opinion.
Okay.
Real controversial opinion.
All right.
I am of the personal belief, it is my personal feeling, that Batfleck was the best cinematic Batman ever.
I'm in complete agreement with you.
And the best Bruce Wayne. He did fantastic in the Bruce Wayne part.
He did both of them.
He was able to play kind of that, because Ben Affleck just kind of is self-righteous and annoying and whatnot anyway. But his Batman was fantastic.
Yes.
Just amazing. The right amount of menace.
Yep.
Yet at the same and believable intelligence. Mm-hmm. Yet at the same time, you could see where there was a desire to be kind and helpful underneath.
Uh-huh.
But such a world weariness and a dejected view of life.
Yeah, everything about him as far as the character itself was spot on.
And now, of course, the voice thing, you love the voice modulation that they
use. Yes, that solves the voice problem that was done from the previous films.
And I think that's probably why they did it that way. Plus, and that's, we said we were focusing on Batman, but we'll go back for a second to the Nolan setup. Michael Caine's not a bad Alfred.
I thought he was really good.
He's pretty good, but there's just a personal love that I have for Jeremy Irons.
He was a perfect casting of Alfred.
Well, just Jeremy Irons is, again, another one of those that, like, you can put him in just about anything.
Yeah.
And I'm going to watch that just because, like, what's Scar going to do now?
Get this. Like, one of the things I really loved about Alfred specifically in these films was you see him the first time you see him, he's a little bit of snark, and he's straight down to business. He's testing the equipment.
Yeah.
He's mapping things out. He's also having a conversation about the previous encounter.
Yeah.
But what he's doing is he is straight down to business. They've got a lot of that in. Have you seen any of the Gotham series yet?
Yes, I've seen. I've seen about the first three or four seasons of the Gotham series.
Okay, Sean Pertwee is absolutely fantastic.
Well, I like him anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah.
But he has that too. He has that same. Equal parts snark and just straight, just full guardianship that he's supposed to have.
Yeah.
But Affleck, if he had gotten the opportunity to get into the noir style origin film that they're apparently still producing, but I think they've dumped, he would have been a perfect young Batman.
Well,
young Bruce, excuse me.
Who?
Affleck.
Affleck. Well, the one scene that he is in. In Suicide Squad is literally the best scene in Suicide Squad.
Oh, yeah.
It's the best scene in the whole movie.
Yeah. But it's Batman being Batman.
Yeah. There's two scenes. Sorry, there's two scenes that he's in.
Yeah.
He's in the Deadshot introduction.
Yes.
And then he's in the introduction for Harley. And both of those.
They're fantastic.
Are amazing. The Deadshot one is so character built in that he's literally like, I'm here to get you, but I don't want to have to do something like this in front of your kid.
Yeah.
And it's when you think about it, when you really think about it in the context of Batman as a character,
yeah,
he is standing in an alley with a father and the father's kid, and he's like, I don't want to do this in front of your kid. And you know what's going on in Bruce's head.
Yeah.
Bruce is thinking, I remember being in an alley. I remember what happened to my parents in an alley. I don't want to make that kid have to deal with what I had to deal with. I'm not going to put that burden that I bear on that freaking kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, Deadshot goes easy.
Yeah.
He doesn't go with too big a fight, but that shows the nobility of Batman, and Affleck plays that perfectly. You can see the pain in his eyes.
Yeah.
That, you know, I've been here, I've done this, I don't want to do this to your kid. I gotta take you in. I understand who you are, I understand what you've done. I understand also that you have a nobility to you in what you do, but you still broke the law and I gotta take you, but I don't want to ruin your kid's life.
Yep.
And it's like, that's what Batman needs to be.
Yep. His introduction as Batman in Batman versus Superman was freaking stellar,
inside,
by the way.
Inside that house?
Yeah. Hiding in the corners.
That prostitution crack house?
Yeah. The only thing you see is, don't the lights go out? And the only thing you see is gunshots every once in a while, light in the room
for a flash. And he's moving around it? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yo, yeah.
Good
stuff.
So, okay, we're both in agreement here. I don't understand why Batman versus Superman, other than, I can even make argument for the Martha scene. I don't understand why those movies were lambasted as hard as they were. They were good.
You're talking...
First of all, I love Henry Cavill as Superman.
Yeah.
I think he's fantastic. He has that innocence that's necessary.
Yeah.
That wholesomeness that's necessary for the part.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can see he doesn't quite register. He is a god. He could destroy the entire world.
Yeah.
But instead, all he wants to do is help it. Even when the world turns its back on him, all he does, instead of going out and reacting violently to it, he goes for a walk in the Appalachians and sees a vision of his dead dad. Like, what, Robin Hood? Why are you here?
Look,
seriously, it's just
the casting is honestly, like, the casting was fantastic.
Well, Amy Adams, questionable. I love her,
really?
but
no, I liked her. I liked her. I think that I don't think that she had enough to work with as far as character development.
I agree with that. Fun casting for Diane Lane to play Superman's mom.
Costner was fantastic.
Oh man, I can't see Man of Steel is one of my favorite movies.
Yeah.
I love watching that movie for multiple reasons. One, Oh, I can't even think of his name now. The guy who plays Zod. He is hilarious in most things that he plays,
yeah.
But he is so scary in this movie.
He is.
In Man of Steel. He is so scary. He's got so much power behind him.
Yeah.
And even Russell Crowe as God, what is his name? What's Superman's dad's name?
Jor-El.
Jor-El. Thank you. Yeah. I can't believe I wasn't getting that.
You're good.
Even Russell Crowe's Jor-El was good.
Oh, yeah.
I love the whole sequence in the beginning of it on Krypton. It's like, that's some shit right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that movie, so much fun. Such a great film.
Yeah.
I love having Guardian in it because if you are a comic book fan, especially if you are a part of a fan or have read anything about the Death of Superman cycle and the Rise of the Superman, Guardian played a huge role in that because Guardian he's actually a clone of the original Guardian,
yes.
And he works for the Cadmus Project.
Yes.
And Cadmus, of course, has Superman's body for a little while and creates the Superboy clone of Superman.
Yes.
During that time period.
Yes.
See, I know more about that than you thought I knew, huh? I know things like the Eradicator.
Can I show you they just released a Reign of the Superman animated film.
I'm going to see.
Oh, yeah. Does it have Return of Superman.
Does it have Hank Henshaw as the cyborg? Is Hank Henshaw the cyborg? Hank Henshaw is the cyborg Superman that comes up during the life and death of Superman as the cyborg that,
yes,
that
the
shows
cyborg
up.
Is, yeah, all four it of is, them are in it.
Well, there's Hank Henshaw, there's Steel.
Yes, Steel is in it.
Which, terrible film with Shaq in it, but the actual comic book character, John Henry Irons, is an amazing comic book character. There's the Eradicator Superman.
Yes.
Which is the one that had the visor.
Yeah, it's all four of them.
And then there's the Superboy.
Mm-hmm. No, there's all four of them. But what they do beforehand, they actually did a Death of Superman film, a proper Death of Superman film. And when I say that they integrate it somewhat with the New 52 universe, what they did is they actually created a series of films that's based on, it starts with the Flashpoint.
Yeah, I saw that.
Twist. And it's those ones, but there's a bunch of them. There's Damian Wayne is in the films and Batwoman is in the films. There's a whole, the League of Shadows, the Court of Owls, all of that stuff is part of it. But then the Justice League also becomes part of it. And it's fantastic, but the Death of Superman is after all of this. And I've read the comics. I still cried at this thing.
Yeah.
That it was an animated film that was good enough to make me cry. I'm not kidding either. Very well done.
Don't feel bad. Animated films make you cry all the time. In fact, I was referencing to in Man of Steel when Costner bites in Man of Steel. Oh man, that's just like and you need somebody with the gravitas of Kevin Costner to be able to pull that role off. He looks like he's a Midwestern dad. He looks like he's a Kansas farm owner and he's just trying to raise his kid right and be a good American kid and all that. And it's so beautiful.
It does become, it's cool because
Snyder does steal a little bit from Michael Bay in that movie. There's a few slow moving American flag shots in that movie.
Yeah.
But as an origin story for literally the most wholesome American hero that has ever been spawned.
Yeah.
The thing that is the ideal of all Americans. Such a beautiful film. And then you jump into his interaction with not a wholesome American hero.
Yeah.
An American hero that is jaded and bitter and has had dealings with some of the worst things in life. And it has made him kind of recoil into his shell and do what he can to make right in the world by whatever means necessary. The connection between the two and to find out that they share some kind of common ground.
Yeah.
It's just brilliant.
Oh yeah.
And you know, they build up throughout the Batman versus Superman movie.
Yeah.
How much the loss of people in Batman's life has made it. So literally the only person he has any interaction with anymore is Alfred. And like you say, Alfred's snarky with him. Alfred has that relationship where he's biting at him, and Batman's barely even emotionally responding to what Alfred is doing. He's just so much in his thing.
Yeah.
And he's trying to get these other people involved, and it's even awkward for him to get these other people involved.
Yeah.
I mean, he meets literally one of the hottest women in existence, and while he's trying to hit on her to some extent, he still doesn't really know how to interact completely with her.
Right.
And I'm sorry, Gal Gadot is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, sorry, wife, when you listen to this, but you know my feelings about Gal Gadot.
There's a lot to There's a lot to those Snyder films that did
well. And that's, very, and that's what I'm saying. They build up throughout Batman versus Superman how much the losses mean. There's the whole Robin outfit and the writing on the Robin outfit. How much those losses mean to him. And I still, did they ever say which Robin it was? Was it Dick? Was it Jason? Was it, I mean, it makes sense for it to be Jason Todd, but was it, you don't know if it's Dick, Jason, or Drake.
I don't think they Drake. Touch on that. Did you ever actually hear with what's going on in the films, did you ever hear the fan theory behind all of what's going on in Joker's, Joker's involvement?
The fan theory is that the Joker in Suicide Squad that would be a part of that universe,
yes,
may actually be Jason Todd.
There's that one. But there was one that I saw that was a really, really well put together full-on summary, which would make sense, by the way, because Jared Leto looks so much younger than what the Joker would technically be.
Yes, the Joker should be a contemporary in age at least with Batman, if not even a little bit older than him.
Yeah, I think, honestly, it would be great that Joker might even be Tim.
Tim? Really?
Well, did you ever see Batman Beyond, Return of the Joker?
Was it Tim Drake in that?
It was Tim Drake who gets converted and kills the Joker in that incarnation.
Okay, so then that would make sense.
Okay.
That would make sense. I didn't know that. I didn't know that Tim Drake became the Joker. I mean, I know Jason Todd becomes Red Hood.
Well, he doesn't become the Joker. Jason Todd becomes Red Hood, but what happens is in the Batman Beyond animated film, what they find out is that Tim Drake is there and the Joker himself returns. And is voiced by Hamill and all this kind of stuff. But they're wondering why the Joker is around. They thought he was dead. Bruce had specifically said, he's like, this is impossible. He's dead. I don't understand what's going on here.
Okay.
It's either an imposter or it's really him, but we don't know what's going on. Well, it turned out that Tim Drake is kidnapped by the Joker, tortured and converted into a little mini-me of the Joker. And during a major fight between Hamill's Joker and Kevin's Batman, Tim is pointing one of the pop guns that's got an actual dart that actually fires with the second pull of the trigger.
Yeah.
And he is standing there. He's standing there laughing to the point where tears are rolling down his face. And he's like having this major conflict. You could tell the internal conflict. And he pulls the trigger because Joker tells him to kill Batman. And then the dart hits Joker in the chest and he kills the Joker. But it turns out that when you see Tim, he's Robin, who's like maybe, you know, 4.5 feet tall.
Yeah.
Right. Like maybe he's 10, 12 years old. And all of the conversion, everything. Well, what ends up happening is he ends up eventually healed. But what happens is the presence of the Joker had been existing in Tim Drake, and Tim Drake, the Joker that was appearing in the Batman Beyond universe, was Tim Drake's alternate personality. So it's Tim Drake with schizophrenia.
Okay, so still it's Tim Drake as the Joker.
But it's still Tim Drake as the Joker. Now, there's another couple of things that do happen, and this would correlate with Tim Drake possibly being the Joker in this continuity.
The Jared Leto Joker.
Think about it this way. If you notice, Wayne Manor is burnt to the flipping ground, right?
Yeah.
Okay? And so what they do at the end of the Justice League film, obviously spoiler warning on all this kind of stuff to anybody who's been listening to this.
Yes.
At the end of the Justice League film, I believe Bruce decides to turn it into Justice League headquarters.
Yeah, I think so.
The manor, right? Rebuild it and turn it into League headquarters. Because he's been living in this like side house with like glass walls and crap over on one side. Well, the idea was that Jared Leto's Joker actually kills Robin and burns Wayne Manor to the ground because he finds out Batman's true identity. And during a confrontation, Jared, as Batman finds the Joker in front of his house, he says, you know, he gets the whole, you've gone too far, how could you do this, blah, blah, blah. And the Joker turns around to him and says, well, don't hit me too hard, I damage easily. Batman crushes his teeth in with his fists.
Oh, so that's where the metal teeth come from.
That's where the metal teeth come from. It's not a grill, it's not a modern thing. If you look closely, those are fillings. Those are fillings and covers and caps on his teeth. His teeth are busted. So the trademark smile that he has is now gone. It's just busted ass teeth. So now the on top of this,
theory,
it's another theory.
I like that.
This explains multiple things. First off, it explains the damaged tattoo that he has across his forehead.
Okay.
It also explains the reason why he has a smile tattooed on his left hand that he covers his face with.
Ah.
Because he is ashamed of his face. So that those ideas, like, people caught on to this, and I don't know if it's ever been fully verified, but if that's the case, Leto's Joker didn't get a fair shot at all.
That's some deep universe stuff, yeah.
Yeah. That is some dark DC level proper stuff that's never going to be explored on now because
Warner Brothers'
over involvement. Yeah,
like you say, rethink my opinion of Leto's Joker, because I've not ever been really overly fond of Leto's Joker, but that makes me do some rethinking.
Yeah, dude.
I mean, people love Jack Nicholson's version of it, and I never did. I thought it was just overplayed and stupid. But Heath's was just terrifying. Heath made me afraid of the Joker. And that was kind of the purpose of it. He really made me afraid of that person.
I liked Nicholson's Joker specifically because it took the Cesar Romero version and it made it super dark.
Okay, but I never liked the
Cesar
Romero
version.
And
still kind of whimsical and still kind of all that kind of stuff, right? But I kind of like that because that was the only example that, think about
true.
It this way.
It was the example
and it wasn't
we had
Burton
at the time.
Really so much because if I remember in Nicholson's contract, he actually had full creative control of the character.
Yeah, Nicholson basically was allowed to do whatever the hell he wanted.
Exactly, which is why it was so good.
It came out fairly decently, I'm going to say that, but at the same time, I just you know the fan theories of the backstory for Ledger's Joker, right?
I've heard that he is a possible Marine.
Yeah, former military of some type or another. That was his injuries may have occurred during an IED explosion.
Oh yeah,
and that's why, for instance, when he's talking to Harvey in the bed and makes the comment about, you know, a truck full of soldiers explode, it's no big deal.
Yeah.
But you try to shoot one mayor, and everybody goes crazy.
Yeah.
That speech, his ease of use of military weapons like a rocket launcher or his ability to get things like gasoline and high explosives and whatnot tend to get the idea that maybe he has some military training and some of that kind of purpose.
I could see him being something, some kind of PSYOP related thing.
Yeah, just went apeshit nuts.
Yeah, well, that he just went apeshit nuts, but he also knows population control. He knows intimidation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He knows psychological
warfare.
Manipulation. Yeah. Psychological warfare. Welfare. That would make sense because the military background, all that kind of stuff. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's. But anyway, so funny enough, after the conversation, I wasn't sure whether it would lead to this, but we are in agreement. As far as cinematic goes, we will miss the Batfleck because he was pretty damn good.
I think he was fantastic.
But further casting, now you talked a little bit about the casting for the newer DC Universe.
Yeah.
I am sad that it's not going to keep or may not keep going in the direction it was going because I do think they finally hit on the casting because Marvel did it. Marvel, we're going to be talking about the Marvel continuity within the next at some point we will talk about it maybe before this comes out, maybe after, whatever, it'll come up at some point.
Yeah.
But Marvel hit it on the head with their casting. Every part that they cast is fantastically perfect. I mean, Robert Downey Jr. is perfect as Iron Man.
Uh-huh.
Both Chris's, actually all three Chris's are perfect in the various incarnations that they do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't think of a single character that is miscast. Maybe Sebastian Stan as Bucky, but honestly, I can't think of anybody else who could play it better. Maybe, though. That would be that would maybe be the only one that I could say is possibly miscast. But everybody else is wonderfully cast.
So far, so far, I haven't seen a major flaw in any of the characters.
And some of them are just genius pieces of casting. Like Tom Holland.
Yeah.
Best Spider-Man ever, hands down, period. He is amazing.
Oh, he's fantastic.
So good.
Isn't he English too?
Yes.
Yeah, he's English. That kid captures that straight up. He captures that Queen's accent like you wouldn't believe, man.
And he's so, again, that innocence, that youthfulness, that exuberance. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
DC has always fallen behind on the casting of their heroes. I mean, as much as I have love for Christopher Reeve was kind of a tall, skinny dude. He really was not. He was, now we all talk about Clark Kent, he was the best. Even to this day, Henry Cavill isn't even close to what he could, what Christopher Reeve did as Clark Kent. His Clark Kent was amazing.
Yeah.
You want to see the real acting there? See the transformation from Clark Kent into Superman. With Superman, he looked noble. With Clark Kent, he looked like he was just a clumsy goof-off who would screw everything up at any moment in time.
Yeah, absolutely.
You didn't trust him with a damn thing. It was amazing.
Yep.
But he just didn't fill out the role of Superman properly. There were various TV iterations and whatnot. But again, Superman is supposed to be, there's supposed to be that kindness and that calmness, but there's also that hidden power. And Reeves just didn't have the power of it. He had the kindness, he had the goodness, he had the all-American feel.
Right.
Just no power behind it. You get some of your TV iterations, for instance, you remember The Adventures of Lois and Clark?
Yeah, Dean Cain.
Dean Cain. Oh, God. a terrible...
I think the whole... That just... The execution the whole of the whole series was terrible. Was not great.
But they didn't do bad with Tom Welling in Smallville.
That wasn't bad.
Especially for a teenage and young adult.
He was good.
That worked out good. Actor by the name of Tyler Hoechner is the current DC... TV universe, CW universe.
Yeah. How's he?
He does Superman in that. He's decent.
Okay.
He's a secondary character because he appears in Supergirl's TV show.
Yeah.
And he's a secondary character in that.
Yeah.
For being a secondary character and not the main draw, he's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
He's pretty darn good. He fits it pretty well. But the DC TV universe, though, the CW universe is actually, again, pretty good at their casting.
Yeah.
But you get into the Justice League and then the Justice League casting. Jason Momoa. Damn.
Oh yeah. He was not somebody I expected to even be cast.
But
and is one of the best decisions I've ever seen.
Especially for the fact that Arthur Curry is supposed to be a white guy with blonde hair.
Yeah.
Having him be part Pacific Islander.
Yeah.
Especially in the movie. Did you see Aquaman or not? I don't remember.
I did not see Aquaman. Okay. I've seen Justice League. I actually just saw Aquaman
last week.
Yes.
In fact. And Temuera Morrison is his dad. Now, you probably don't know the name.
No.
But you know probably the most famous part he's ever played.
What was that?
Jango Fett. And subsequently, every one of the clones.
Yeah, from Star Wars. Of course.
He's Jango Fett.
That's cool.
Oh, hell yes, it's cool for him to be Aquaman's dad, because he's an amazing actor anyway.
Yeah.
Because he did all the voices for all the clones in the movies.
Yeah, of course.
He didn't do it in the animated series. They actually had other people do it in the animated series.
Oh, cool.
But he did it for all of the clones, and then he was Jango.
That's cool.
Yeah. The only Jango that matters, by the way. Sorry, Jamie Foxx and Tarantino fans. There's only one Jango, and he's a Fett. But anyway. or classical jazz fans, people who like jazz and blues music.
I was going to say Reinhardt.
Forget about, you would think Reinhardt.
Hell yeah, I would say because Reinhardt.
You're the guitarist, you would think Reinhardt. Sorry, there's still only one Django.
But that Django isn't even spelled with a D, bro.
So?
It's a completely different Django.
Fine. Fine then. The only D Django that you should pay attention to is the guitarist, and the only Django you should pay attention to is the Fett.
Completely side point here. Well, not really, but okay.
My backpacks.
Have you seen
got jets.
Getting back onto
Boba, the Fett. Sorry.
Oh my goodness. Go on. Have you seen the new preview for the Tim Miller directed Joaquin Phoenix Joker?
Yes.
Holy smokes. I love it.
This is where we have a differing of opinion.
You have to be kidding me. Don't, if you give me the whole suit colors or anything like that, that's going down.
No.
Remember,
no,
this is a non-canonical development. I have seen some people theorizing that it's the possibility. It is the development of the Joker going into, from what I see, it's a possible development of the Joker going into the Dark Knight trilogy. Personally, that's what I see because of the amount of chaos that goes into it. And it's not just a one bad day thing, it looks like to me. It looks like a continual happening of events that drives him into that
It's,
situation.
It's not
but,
the makeup.
Okay.
It's not the suit.
Okay.
It's the Joaquin Phoenix.
Why? I don't understand you. I do not understand you.
I just
You need to explain this.
I just don't like Joaquin Phoenix. I don't like him. I didn't like him when he was talked about for the role. I don't like much of anything that he does.
You just don't like Joaquin Phoenix?
No, I'm really not a fan of his as an actor.
Really?
Yeah. He's one of those people that makes it hard for me to watch a movie. I'll tell you this.
Like, they were talking about putting DiCaprio in the role.
Yeah, see, oh my God, I was... No,
we are not in agreement.
No. I was just about to say that word or that name.
Yep.
He is another actor that literally I cannot watch movies that he is in.
Really?
I cannot watch movies that DiCaprio is in.
Then we are in agreement because I don't think DiCaprio would have fit.
No. Like, I don't know why Scorsese has the great love that he has for DiCaprio in the last 15 years or so.
Yeah.
Because he's put him in every one of his major movies.
Yeah.
Which I'm not a huge Scorsese fan anyway. He makes good films.
Yeah.
But I don't like run out and watch a Scorsese movie some directors.
Yeah.
But like, if it wasn't for the fact that Cameron Diaz is in the movie, Leonardo DiCaprio would be the worst part of Gangs of New York. The worst part. Cameron Diaz loses his accent
halfway through the damn film.
Cameron Diaz is really the worst part of that movie.
That kid had a better accent than he did.
But, I mean, Leonardo DiCaprio would be an even worse choice than Joaquin Phoenix. Again, just I may not like Joaquin Phoenix, but Leonardo DiCaprio is much worse on my list for that.
I personally would think so, only because with him, there's so much about his... Just his demeanor, general demeanor, he doesn't adapt well. What Tim has been doing...
At least there's some craziness in Joaquin Phoenix.
That's where I'm getting... No, and wait, I also Tim, like the Tim, offshoot Tim Miller, you said,
right?
Tim Miller is the guy who's doing
Isn't
it.
Isn't he the guy who did the first Deadpool?
Yes.
Okay, so that gives me a little bit more good feeling about it. But at the same time, it's just... I don't know, man. Joaquin Phoenix is the Joker.
What's really funny is like Scorsese's on as a producer for this one, too.
That's hilarious for personal reasons. At some point, you may get the explanation as to why that is really, really funny. I'm trying very hard not to laugh.
Okay, so, this is like an offshot like side story. It actually takes place in the 70s, and
that explains a lot of the look of the film. Okay, I was wondering why it had that kind of a retro look to it.
It takes place in the 70s. De Niro is in it. And he plays... Well,
I know De Niro's in it.
Are you familiar with the Dark Knight Returns story that Frank Miller did?
Somewhat, yes.
So in the Dark Knight Returns, the Joker comes out of retirement after he sees that Batman is back, right?
Yeah.
Except Batman's like 50. And he had been retired for 10 years before this.
Yeah.
So Batman comes back, right? Because Gotham's crime is just... skyrocketed without him,
and there's some weird gang
and
of
the Joker
like
has been in a
whatnot.
Practically catatonic state. He's just been unresponsive to everything, and then he sees Batman news reports and starts coming back. So what he does, he gets together with a publicist, like an A&R guy, and books time on a talk show. And is trying to basically put out his
version of this. Yeah.
Okay, so he puts out his persona as a reformed criminal who's found his sanity and all this kind of stuff.
Okay,
and then he poisons and kills the entire crowd in the whole theater.
Yes. Okay, I remember this.
I think they're alluding to that, and I think there's a lot of influences to Scorsese films in this trailer that a lot of people have speculated on. We're talking King of Comedy. We're talking Raging Bull. We're talking Taxi Driver. It's got that kind of feel to it.
I get that, which would make sense for the 70s setting. I'm just thinking on your connection of the Jared Leto Joker and your thought that this may be a precursor to the Jared Leto Joker. This could be the Joker that turns whatever version of maybe Robin that the Jared Leto Joker could have been into the Jared Leto Joker.
It could be. And there is the possibility of multiple Jokers. This also could be the Joker that becomes the Joker in the Dark Knight films as well.
Okay, because, I mean, keep in mind, there has never been a single direct origin story for the Joker. There have been multiple different origin stories.
Yes.
The Jack Napier one used for the Michael Keaton film was one of many. There was the
That was original, one started by Tim, actually.
There was the original Red Hood possibility Joker origin story.
That was, yeah. That's, you're talking the Killing Joke Red Hood.
There was the One Bad Day version of it.
That's the Killing Joke. The Red Hood and the One Bad Day are the same
one. The Killing Joke one? Okay. So there's been multiple versions of where the Joker has come from. I think one of the appeals of the Joker is the fact that there is no definitive origin story for him.
Yeah.
So it could just be any psychotic, crazy person that put on some makeup and went nutso.
Right, right. And that's what I like about just the...
But then doesn't this, and I think maybe this is my issue with this movie, is does this movie, by making it a possible origin story, because that's what it looks like to be as an origin story, does this take away from that mythology? Does this take away from the mystery that this character, at least for me, has always had? I will admit, you know, we each have our favorite comic book heroes.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we each have our favorite comic book villains.
Yeah.
The Joker is not one of my favorite comic book villains. Now, Batman is my favorite comic book hero for DC.
Yes.
Not my favorite overall. But
I can understand
but
that.
But he's not my... Joker is not my favorite comic book villain. He's a good one, mind you. He's near the top, but he's not my favorite.
Right.
My favorite is, sadly, with a different company.
Okay. Who is it? Just let me know.
It's actually kind of disappointing to say because of the movie that just recently came out that was awful. Venom.
Oh, really?
Well, Spider-Man's my favorite comic book character overall.
Right.
Venom is so awesome, especially because he's not really a villain. He's actually, Eddie Brock's actually a good guy that just hates Spider-Man.
Yeah.
The rest of his stuff, he's a decent person. And the alien symbiote is just angry that Spider-Man wouldn't let him take over his body, basically.
Essentially, yeah.
But
they took that completely out of the storyline in this, didn't they?
Well, I refuse to watch the new movie because it has no real connection to the way the character was originally. See, the beauty I loved about Venom is that he used to be a part of Spider-Man.
Well, yeah, that's why the symbiote doesn't trigger the spider sense. It's
exactly.
Why he's a direct weakness.
He is the and see now Carnage, which is the offspring of the Venom symbiote, does trigger the spider sense because he was Carnage himself, or the symbiote part of Carnage was not a part of the bond with the Venom symbiote and Spider-Man and Peter.
Yes,
so he triggers the spider sense, but that's kind of the beauty that I liked is. Just an innate quality of Venom is that he does not trigger what is, at least in the comics, one of Spider-Man's best powers is his spider sense power, knowing that something's coming at him,
right,
and able to dodge it. It's the only villain of his that does not. And it's the only villain that has they try to have a close tie with Doc Ock at one point or another, being with Aunt May. And there's many times they've tried to make the close connection. The movies made the connection of Peter being friends with Harry Osborn and knowing Norman Osborn before everything went down with Osborn being the Goblin. But like literally the suit was molded. The symbiote was molded to Parker's body. It was trying to become a part of his body. In the comics, it took Reed Richards, the smartest man on the planet, to help remove the symbiote the first time from Parker. And the second time is when he used the church bells because he knew that sonic waves would be damaging to the symbiote.
Yep.
But it literally took Reed Richards to figure out how to get the symbiote off him the first time.
Yep.
And so this thing was a part of him. And that level of betrayal that the symbiote felt for being attacked by its host.
Right.
And the level of betrayal that still is in Peter for this thing that was with him and a piece of him attacking him now and becoming a villain of his. That's just, the connection is so great. It's so powerful. It's closer, in many ways, even closer than a brother or a father or a mother turning against you. It is a part of you turning against you.
Right.
And that's kind of that and Venom always looked badass in all of the illustrations of him. Any poster that was done of him.
Yeah.
I collected cards at the time. Venom with that black and the shiny eyes and the giant mouth, the tongue coming out. Joker can be his pasty face, whatever, in his purple suit. I admit, I love the purple suit and all, but damn, Venom looked badass. But anyway. That's my fear. You get the Venom movie, right?
Right.
This almost follows in the same token. To me, Spider-Man for the longest time was the biggest Marvel draw until Downey Jr. smacked Iron Man about and made everybody love Iron Man, a character that really hadn't had a lot of attention for years. Spider-Man was the big draw.
Right.
Especially the single draw by himself in a very similar way to the way Batman was a very singular draw. Batman and Superman for DC, but Batman had even more draw in some ways than Superman did.
True.
And both of them have an amazing cast of villains. I mean, who does Superman have? Lex Luthor? Bizarro?
His main arch nemesis. I mean, you've got the other...
Metallo?
My personal favorite? Brainiac is fantastic.
Yeah, but Batman is the one with all the rogues gallery of villains.
Yeah.
And then in Marvel, Spider-Man is the one that has all of the villains. Villains all over the place.
Yeah.
Villains doing all kinds of creepy stuff. So those two kind of had that kind of similarity to me. And you have the bright and happy version and then the dark and brooding version.
Right.
These are like the two shining lights of it. So within a year of each other, you're getting Spider-Man's biggest villain, which is Venom. That is his biggest villain.
Uh-huh.
Venom gets his movie, and it's, for lack of a better word, a terrible film. It's garbage.
But you said you haven't seen it.
Because I've seen enough of the previews to know it's garbage. They don't even pronounce the word symbiote correctly.
I think they really caught
symbiote.
I think they caught a lot of crap for it, and I think they changed it. I'm not sure. I haven't seen it either. They may have,
but still, wrong choice. I don't know
how that could get past
I like
anyone.
Tom Hardy. I do. But I don't like him as Eddie Brock. Still not right. I mean, he's better than Topher Grace as Eddie Brock, but still, he's just not quite right for it.
Are you railing back to Joaquin Phoenix here?
Well, that's just it. You're getting now this Joker movie.
Right.
It's going to give you an origin story for the Joker. And again, Venom, they messed up the origin story. They made him a standalone thing for his origin story, did not connect him to Spider-Man, which is the whole point of what Venom... Venom is created because both Eddie Brock has a hate for Spider-Man and the symbiote has a hate for Spider-Man.
Right.
It's a shared thing, and that's how they work together.
Okay.
You remove Spider-Man from the equation, what is Venom's purpose? There isn't one. And that's the problem. Even when Venom had his own comic, Lethal Protector, back in the mid-90s or so, I actually have a few of the additions of that still. Because I liked Venom that much.
Right.
Even when he's being an anti-hero and kind of a somewhat good guy fighting off all of the various symbiote spawns that come out, Carnage, and there's like five or six other ones, there's still, even when they're doing good, there's still the hatred for Spider-Man. They still have that. That's what bonds the two of them together. That's why they're so strong, is because they hate Spider-Man so much.
Right.
This ruins the origin. This ruins the character. That's why I don't want to watch it, because you lose the point of it. Again, this comes back to the Joaquin Phoenix Joker. By giving him this origin story, by demystifying what before was unexplained, he just was what he was. By giving him that, even Nolan did not give him a backstory, and all the backstory that Nolan gave for everything in his movies. He gave no backstory to the Joker. And he even said he didn't want to because he just wanted the Joker to exist as he was.
Right.
By doing this, and by... I'll admit, personal issue with Joaquin Phoenix, but by doing this, by putting the Joker in this movie, giving him this backstory, giving him the reason why he became the Joker, in many ways, I'm worried that it's going to destroy the true beauty that the Joker is as a villain. See what I'm saying?
I don't know. I'm not completely sure about that yet.
And that's my fear. That is really my fear. Because when I first heard a Venom movie, I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting. And then you find out Spider-Man's not involved. Who is the Joker without Batman? Is Batman in this movie? Because there's no indication that Batman is in this movie. Who is the Joker without Batman?
Dude.
Is the Joker even... Does it have any purpose?
This takes place in the 70s. You said you saw the trailer, right?
Yeah.
The little kid who stretches out is like he's hooking his fingers in the kid's mouth.
Is that supposed to be Bruce?
That's Bruce.
Are you sure?
Yes. That's Bruce. As a matter of fact, the main person who... the main antagonist, quote-unquote, of the film, as far as I understand, is Thomas Wayne. Who was supposed to be played by Alec Baldwin until he couldn't make the part.
So you're saying that that this may be a Joker created by the actions of Thomas Wayne or the mistakes of Thomas Wayne?
It's very possible because he is not seen as very philanthropic in this film. Well, not necessarily philanthropic, but he is making a decision about... See, here's the thing. One of the main involvements of the Wayne family in their efforts to clean up Gotham was they did it with money and they did it with philanthropy. But
yeah.
Their purpose was to try to bring crime down.
Yeah.
They were targeted by the mob because they were becoming successful. That's one of the big plot points, because they weren't part of the court and they weren't part of, like, they have like a long family history in Gotham and like all this kind of stuff, especially yeah. as it was established in the New 52 stuff. But
well, yeah, Solomon Wayne had been a part of Gotham for many years.
Right, exactly. So when you, in this film, what's happening is, and again, this is, we're super fresh with it. This is all kind of theoretical at this point, fan theory kind of stuff. But Thomas Wayne is actually, he's trying to crack down on crime. Now, there's only, let's see, there's the name of the character that Joaquin Phoenix is playing is Arthur Curry. No, I believe.
It's not Arthur Curry. It's Arthur Fleck.
Arthur Fleck. I'm because sorry. Arthur Curry is somebody else.
Aquaman.
Aquaman. Thank you. Arthur Fleck. I believe his mother has a part in it, in this film. And Thomas Wayne there's has it. A, Martha a, is not penny, in it, which I'm surprised about.
There's a Penny Fleck. There's a Penny Fleck.
There's a Penny movie. Fleck?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which may be his mother. It may be
yeah,
something
this
else.
Yeah, this is a completely different offshoot character. This is one of those ones. Now, if you are not sure, did you read anything about the New 52 at all before they ended
bit,
it?
Okay. A little bit.
Are you familiar with the Joker theory in the New 52?
There's something we already discussed, or is this
no.
something new? What is it?
There is an oracle type character, some type of mystical oracle character that exists in the New 52 continuity before the comics were rewritten, the origins were rewritten, and the new universe past the New 52 came in.
Okay.
And there's a major part of a Justice League issue, I believe, where Batman gets to meet this oracle, and he asks, because it's a question that has been driving him the entire time, who is the Joker? And he learns that there's more than one. He learns that there's actually three.
Okay.
So the multi-Joker theory, which has been speculated by many fans, is that there are three major player Jokers. And they've all been portrayed in the films, and this triple Joker theory or multi-Joker theory is based on a multitude of things. But the first one is that the Joker existed far before Batman was ever a thing, and he actually had existed about 100 years before. There is an issue in the New 52 setup where the Joker has basically come in contact with the Lazarus Pit. If there's nobody who's familiar with the Lazarus Pit, look it up.
I know Lazarus Pit very okay. much.
So the Joker has been, the Joker is actually well over 100 years old, or at least one of them is. But there is three major properties of the Joker, I believe. There is the maniacal, whimsical Joker. Excuse me. There is the whimsical Joker, which is basically based on the Cesar Romero type, classic comics type.
Okay.
There is the methodical Joker, which is more the Jack Nicholson type.
Yeah.
And then there's the chaotic Joker, who is more the Heath Ledger type.
Okay.
The methodical Joker is the one that paralyzed Barbara Gordon.
Okay.
Okay. The chaotic Joker is, again, more the Heath Ledger type. And the chaotic Joker is the one in the New 52 that cut off his own face.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I know about that one.
That is the general theory of this entire thing. However, putting this Arthur Fleck character into this, you're going to start seeing comic books based on this character, because Joaquin Phoenix doesn't do sequels.
Well, and
people are going to be asking for a sequel after this is done.
Well, and also apparently there was some, the weight loss he needed for the role made it very difficult to do filming. They could only film things one time because he lost a ton of weight.
Yeah.
This is more information now, knowing that there's a Thomas Wayne connection and a Bruce Wayne connection.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's still worries me about what will come of the Joker character after something like this. It's just, it is worrisome. I did want to make a slight correction for you though.
Yes.
Tim Miller did not direct this.
No.
It was actually directed by a guy named Todd Phillips.
Todd Phillips. Oh, Todd Phillips. Oh my goodness. Why
Todd
am I?
Todd Phillips
is
actually,
Tim Miller in, is he involved in this somehow?
Not that I can see, but Todd Phillips has a very interesting set of movies that he has directed.
Uh-huh.
We'll go with the first one that I recognize, Road Trip.
Yes. Oh, that's right. Bradley Cooper is part of the production team on this.
Starsky and Hutch.
Yes.
School for Scoundrels.
Yeah, he's done a lot of comedies.
The Hangover, Due Date, The Hangover Part 2, Part 3, and most recently War Dogs, and now Joker. Wow. So this is interesting. He is a very comedic director.
Yes.
That makes me a little more curious, but again, at the same time, it worries me that we're going to lose the mystique of what is arguably, I mean, not my personal opinion, but arguably the best comic book villain that there is. I mean, one could argue that he is the best.
That's very possible. And I can consider that argument too. Personally, he's my personal favorite.
Which comic I understand. Book villain. Being the Batman fan that you are, I completely understand that would make sense. Most people that are Batman fans, Joker's got to top your list. There's as much as there is a huge gallery of other villains to consider. Honestly, nobody in that gallery ranks where the Joker ranks. Did any of the other of them kill a Robin?
Right.
Joker did. At least for a while he did. Did any of the other of them paralyze Barbara Gordon?
Oh, he did far worse
than
that.
And brutalize her?
Yeah.
Completely?
Yep.
I mean, we're talking. If you can break somebody like Jim Gordon, you've done a thing.
But he didn't.
He didn't
break Jim.
Almost.
He got real close.
But the thing being, the Joker does stand head and shoulders above.
But he does. Any of the he other has villains. Zero filter when it comes down to his plans.
And that an origin story worries me. There was too much origin, I felt, in the first Tim Burton Batman going from the Jack Napier thing. There was too much origin, I thought. But that's...
I didn't like turning him into Joe Chill. I didn't think that was cool.
No, personally. Making him Joe Chill on top of being Jack Napier, that was... Yeah, it was too much. Joe Chill is his own character, and that character's been around for many, 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 many years.
Yeah.
I actually have a Adventures of Batman anthology set up that I got in 87.
Cool.
It's about, I'd say an inch thick of various comics, and it's got the two of the first appearances of Joe Chill in the comics.
But, cool.
All right, I think we've said enough what we can say about the Batman stuff and its subsequent related things. This has actually been an interesting day for podcasting because, to be completely honest with you, we had a whole different subject we were going to talk about, and due to some recording issues, we didn't get that taken care of properly.
Hey,
some
whatever,
weird
man.
Stuff happened.
Hey, I kind of like this one because this one was a bit of an ad lib this time.
This was literally just me saying, let's start recording stuff and see what happens.
Yeah.
And this is what happened, and I'm glad we did it because the stuff we had planned to do, some kind of a computer glitch, nobody's fault, it just didn't record right.
Yeah.
And so at least we had this as a backup that I think is even more fun than the history lesson we were giving. Now he's checking now to make sure that this recorded all properly. Are we still recording? Yes, we're still recording.
We're fantastic. Still recording.
So we still got all this, which we're really happy about because the other one was a boring history lesson. I will say that there were some interesting things in it, but this discussion, far more interesting.
I thought it was fun.
All right. So enjoy our Batman talk. And please, as always. Oh, wait. Big announcement, Mike.
Yes.
I'm giving you this announcement.
Oh, boy.
As of last week, and of course, with the debut or with the release of this podcast.
Yeah.
We are no longer just on Facebook. And,
that's right.
And Twitter and YouTube. Tell them, Mike. Tell them what other things we're on.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we are now on Spotify and Google Play. We're currently working on getting on more platforms as well. But if you guys are hearing this from the main website, or if you're hearing this from YouTube, which we've been on for a little while, or you got this link through Facebook, we are now on Spotify and we are on Google Play, and we're looking to get out on more platforms. So you guys don't necessarily have to go directly to the website anymore. You don't have to go to YouTube use up all of your data.
You can actually
just look us up on Spotify.
You can actually
and on Google Play.
Go on to Spotify and Google Play and just type in the word Xennial. Xennial,
yes.
Xennial, which is the generation that we're talking about. And guess what? It will bring us up.
It will.
That's all that's necessary is just that word, Xennial.
That is awesome.
So great to be connected to that at this point.
Yeah, we are super excited about it. It's wonderful. Anyways, woo! Please, if you guys are checking us out on those platforms, you can also check out our website. For shorthand, go to zencron.com, X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N. Or you can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Zencron.
And please let us know on Facebook or Twitter or anywhere where you can send us any kind of message. Let us know how your experience is getting the stuff on Spotify and on Google Play, just so we get a little bit of feedback from you. Which ones you enjoy using, which ones are the easiest for you to access, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Any information is great. Any feedback is great. We want to hear from you as much as, if you're listening, you want to hear from us.
Please comment. Let us know what you thought of this episode. Give us your opinions on these films.
Tell us
all
who
this.
Your favorite Batman is.
Right? Absolutely. Hey,
well, okay. Oh, okay.
Or if you just want to make fun of me for screwing up directors' names and everything else that I've been doing this entire time, please feel free to do so.
Real quick. Not just live action, but just any Joker ever. Best Joker ever?
Heath Ledger.
Really?
Yeah.
Not just acting of it, but best Joker
goodness.
Ever.
Oh, best Joker ever all the way across?
All the way across.
Mark, come on.
Mark Hamill, of course.
Absolutely, 100%.
Okay. Best Batman all the way across?
Kevin Conroy.
Okay, at least we're in agreement with that.
Oh, yes.
Because all we talked about was the live action. We have to throw in the animated thing. Kevin Conroy is Batman, period.
Yes.
And Mark Hamill, as much as I love him as Luke, he is the Joker.
He is the Joker.
And just can't be anything but the Joker.
Oh, yes.
Anyway. That's it for today. We are out and hope y'all enjoy.
Thank you so much. Y'all have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.